ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. दिस् इस् दि फिफ्थ् केण्टो चाप्टर् 6 is a text 19. That's what I thought, yeah. Thank you. That's what I prepared for. This chapter is the narration of the activities of King Bharata. And first we can read the chapter summary. In this chapter, the activities of King Bharata Maharaj, the emperor of the whole world, are described. Bharat Maharaj performed various ritualistic ceremonies, Vedic yajnas, and satisfied the Supreme Lord by his different modes of worship. In due course of time, he left home and resided in Haridwar and passed his days in devotional activities. Being ordered by his father, Lord Rishabhadeva, Bharata Maharaj married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarupa. After this, he ruled the whole world peacefully. Formerly, this planet was known as Ajanabha, and after the reign of Bharata Maharaj, it became known as Bharatavarsha. Bharata Maharaj begot 5 sons in the womb of Panchajani, and he named the sons Sumati, Rashtrabhrita, Sudarshana, Avarana, and Dhumraketu. Bharata Maharaj was very rigid in executing religious principles and following in the footsteps of his father. He therefore ruled the citizens very successfully. Because he performed various yajnas to satisfy the Supreme Lord, he was personally very satisfied. Being of undisturbed mind, he increased his devotional activities unto Lord Vasudeva. Bharata Maharaj was competent in understanding the principles of saintly persons like Narad, and he followed in the footsteps of the sages. He also kept Lord Vasudeva constantly within his heart. After finishing his kingly duties, he divided his kingdom amongst his 5 sons. Then he left home and went to the place of Pulaha, known as Pulahashrama. There he ate forest vegetables and fruits and worshipped Lord Vasudeva with everything available. Thus he increased his devotion toward Vasudeva, and he automatically began to realize further his transcendental, blissful life. Due to his highly advanced spiritual position, there were sometimes visible in his body the ashta-sattvika transformations, such as ecstatic crying and bodily trembling, which are symptoms of love of Godhead. It is understood that Maharaj Bharata worshipped the Supreme Lord with the mantras mentioned in the Rig Veda, generally known as Gayatri Mantra, which aim at the Supreme Narayana, situated within the sun. Everybody know about that? And who here worships Shalagram Shila? Anybody? Those who worship Shalagram Shila, they know. There is a mantra that you begin the puja with from the Rig Veda, dedicated to Surya Narayana, the Lord within the sun globe. It's a famous mantra, and in fact, many of our prayers are based on this. Jayam Sada Savitramandala Madhivarati Narayana Sarasijasana Sannivishta Keyuravan Kanaka Kundalavan Kiriti Hari Hiranmayavapur Dhritashanka Chakraha. That means that the Supreme Lord Narayana, he is holding the conch and the disc, and he's situated within the lotus of the sun planet. One should always meditate upon him. So this is from the Rig Veda, this mantra. And of course, Gayatri mantra is also expansion. Meditation on the Supreme Lord represented as the authority, the deity, transcendental deity of the sun globe, Surya Narayana. At least I know in Vrindavan, whenever someone sees the sun, the first time in the day, he offers pranams. Sun and the moon, because they influence us in so many ways. Astrologers know the influence of the sun and the moon. In a couple of days, as a matter of fact, the moon is going to be eclipsed. In Hitopadesha, there's a nice mantra. Likhitam api lalate pranchitam kasamartha. Whatever is written on your forehead, you cannot evade that, even if you happen to be the sun god. In the Chandogya Upanishad, this sage Vamadeva, he actually had the stunning realization one day that, my God, once I was the sun. We may have been the sun once. Look at us now. Anyway, so the sun and the moon, even if you happen to be in such a prominent position, you cannot evade what is written on your forehead. There's a kind of an indelible barcode, you might say, written on our foreheads that only demigods can read it. That's got our fate written on it. It's called Apurva, mentioned later on in this chapter. So, anyway, we worship these august personalities, advanced personalities. At least we respect them. So in the Rig Veda in particular, the sun globe is the deity, presiding deity, representative of Lord Narayana, is worshipped by that mantra. And it would appear from this description that Maharaj Bharata achieved perfection by meditating in that way on the Lord as Vasudeva. So let's read and see what happens here. There are no verses here, so it's not written down, but I'll read the prose passages here. In text 1 begins, Sri Shuka Uvacha Bharatastu Maha Bhagavato Yada Bhagavat Bhagavatavanitala paripalanaya sanchintitas tad anushasana paraha panchajanim vishwarupa duhitaram upayeme. Shukdev Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear king, Bharata Maharaj was a topmost devotee. Following the orders of his father, who had already decided to install him on the throne, he began to rule the earth accordingly. When Bharata Maharaj ruled the entire globe, he followed the orders of his father and married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarupa. There's no purport. Text 2. Tasyam uha va atmajan kartsyena anurupan atmanaha panchajanayan asa bhutadir eva bhuta sukshmani sumatim rashtrabhritam sudarshanam avaranam dhumarketam iti. Just as the false ego creates the subtle sense objects, Maharaj Bharata created 5 sons in the womb of Panchajani, his wife. These sons were named Sumati, Rashtrabhrita, Sudarshana, Avarana, and Dhumraketu. What do those names mean? Sometimes we find in the Bhagavatam, quite often we find in the Bhagavatam, there are long lists of genealogy given. And in some cases, I'm thinking in particular in the 4th canto, when the sons of Brahma are mentioned, these names have great significance. So here it would seem that way as well, because the 5 sons of Maharaj Bharata were named Sumati. What does Sumati mean? Very smart, very intelligent. And The other one is Rashtrabhrita. That means that the country is maintained by him. And Sudarshana means he's very handsome to see. Sudarshana, nice view when you look at him. Avarana means he envelops everyone within his shelter. And Dhumraketu, it would appear he had a flag of smoky color. Dhumraketu means gray-colored flag. Text 3, there is again no purport here, so we'll continue. Ajanabham namaitad varsham bharatam iti yata arabhya vyapadishanti. Formerly, this planet was known as Ajanabha-varsha, but since Maharaj Bharata's reign, it has become known as Bharata-varsha. There's a purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This planet was formerly known as Ajanabha because of the reign of King Nabhi. After Bharat Maharaj ruled the planet, it became celebrated as Bharata-varsha. I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse that because he was so much distinguished, the people were so fond of him, they decided to change the name in his honor. Just like sometimes, I remember it used to be Palam Airport in New Delhi. Now they've named it Indira Gandhi International Airport because they consider her to be a Mahajana. Text 4. That was just a short purport. We'll continue. Sabahuvim Mahipati Pitripitamahavad Uruvatsalataya Sve Sve Karmani Vartamanaha Prajaha Swadharamam Anavartamanaha Palipalayat is an important point made here. Maharaj Bharata was very learned, was a very learned and experienced king on this earth. He perfectly ruled the citizens, being himself engaged in his own respective duties. Maharaj Bharata was as affectionate to the citizens as his father and grandfather had been. Remember, now, Maharaj Nabhi was his forefather, and the earth was named after him. So in the same way, it was renamed after Bharat Maharaj because he followed very nicely in the same footsteps, and he engendered that degree of appreciation from his subjects, something modern-day rulers can learn. Maharaj Bharata was as affectionate to the citizens as his father and grandfather had been. Keeping them engaged in their occupational duties, he ruled the earth. There's a very nice purport here by Srila Prabhupada. It is most important that the chief executive rule the citizens by keeping them fully engaged in their respective occupational duties. Some of the citizens were Brahmanas, some were Kshatriyas, some were Vaishyas and Shudras. It is the duty of the government to see that the citizens act according to these material divisions for their spiritual advancement. Very important point. No one should remain unemployed or unoccupied in any way. One must work as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra on the material path. And on the spiritual path, everyone should act as a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. Although formerly the government was a monarchy, all the kings were very affectionate toward the citizens, and they strictly kept them engaged in their respective duties. Therefore, society was very smoothly conducted. Om Gnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Nama. I just have to say something here because the purport seems to invite it, that in our society also, if we have leaders who are very strict and who are very strict about engaging those who are in their care, then we see that everything goes on very smoothly, like this Rath Yatra festival that we had yesterday. Of course, if Jagannath decides to intervene somehow, that's always his option, of course. But we have, in the temple president, Swavas Prabhu, we have such an exemplary Vaishnava who is as strict as is implied here in this description of Bharata Maharaj, but also very much beloved by the devotees. Just wanted to say that. at least I feel, oh, it's very enlivened to come here and see how so many jewel-like Vaishnavas are residing here and led by such a qualified Krishna-conscious leader as Swavas Prabhu. I'm going to continue now to the next text. EJ cha bhagavantam yajna kratu rupam kratubhir uchava chaihi shradhaya ahritagni hotra darsha purnamasa chatur masya pushu samanam prakriti vikritibhir anusavanam chatur hotra vidhina. With great faith, King Bharata performed various kinds of sacrifice. He performed the sacrifices known as Agnihotra, Darsha, Puranamasa, Chaturmasya, Pashu Yajna, wherein a horse is sacrificed, and Soma Yajna, wherein a kind of beverage is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations of Chaturhotra were strictly followed. In this way, Bharata Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does everyone understand this? Sometimes the sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially, but in any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations were strictly followed. I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Prabhupada doesn't mention it in his purport, which I'll read. But I think, again, it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur who says that there is an option. So just like in deity worship, sometimes we have an option. You can do the full program or you can do an abridged program, modified. That's called vikrita. Prakrita means the normal thing, the natural thing, and vikrita means the modified thing. So there's an option there. Ishtam, as is desired. Purport. Animals like hogs and cows were offered in sacrifice to test the proper execution of the sacrifice. Otherwise, there was no purpose in killing the animal. Actually, this animal was offered in the sacrificial fire to get a rejuvenated life. Generally, an old animal was sacrificed in the fire, and it would come out again in a youthful body. Some of the rituals, however, did not require animal sacrifice. In the present age, animal sacrifices are forbidden. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ashvamedham Gavalambham Sanyasam Palapaitrikam Devarena Sutotpattim Kalau Panchadivarjayat. In this age of Kali, five acts are forbidden: the offering of a horse in sacrifice, offering of a cow in sacrifice, acceptance of the order of sannyas, the offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, and a man's begetting children in his brother's wife. This is a Shastri Smriti quote that's included in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 17, text 164. Such sacrifices are impossible in this age due to the scarcity of expert brahmanas or ritvijaha who are able to take the responsibility. In the absence of these, the Sankirtan Yajna is recommended. Yajnai Sankirtanai Prayer Yajanti Hisumethasaha. After all, sacrifices are executed to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajnartha Karnamana. Such activities should be carried out for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. In this age of Kali, the Supreme Lord in his incarnation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be worshipped with his associates by performance of Sankirtana Yajna, the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. This process is accepted by intelligent men. Yajnai Sankirtanai Prayair Yajantihi Sumedhasaha. The word Sumedhasaha refers to intelligent men who possess very good brain substance. Srila Prabhupada ki. Now, I'm going to just read one more text, and it's a little bit long, so please bear with me. Sampracharatsu nana yageshu virachitanga kriyeshu apurvam yat tat kriyahalam dhanamakhyam pare brahmani yajna purushe sarva devatalinganam mantranam ardhanyama Kataya Sakshat Kartari Paradevatayam Bhagavati Vasudeva Eva. bhavayamana atmanaipunya mridata kashayo harisu advaryubhir grihamaneshu sayajamano yajnibhajo devanstan purushavayaveshu abhyadhyayat. Translation is, after performing the preliminaries of offering various sacrifices, Maharaj Bharata offered the results in the name of religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. In other words, he performed all the yajnas for the satisfaction of Lord Vasudeva, Krishna. Maharaj Bharata thought that since the demigods were different parts of Vasudeva's body, he controls those who are explained in the Vedic mantras. By thinking in this way, Maharaj Bharata was freed from all material contamination, such as attachment, lust, and greed. When the priests were about to offer the sacrificial ingredients into the fire, Maharaj Bharata expertly understood how the offering made to different demigods was simply an offering to the different limbs of the Lord. For instance, Indra is the arm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Surya, the sun, is his eye. We've already discussed the importance of Surya. So here we see. Thus, Maharaj Bharata considered that the oblations offered to different demigods were actually offered unto the different limbs of Lord Vasudeva. The Acharyas don't comment very much on all the verses up until this point, but like a tidal wave, suddenly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very long purport, very elaborate explanation of this text, which forms the basis of Srila Prabhupada's own purport, which we can read now with rapt attention. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says that as long as one does not develop the pure devotional service of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, one must carry out his prescribed duties. Does anyone know where he says that? Very good. This is in the 11th canto. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the verse in full in his commentary there. Very important verse also. Since Bharata Maharaj was a great devotee, one may ask why he performed so many sacrifices that are actually meant for karmis. Good question. The fact is that he was simply following the orders of Vasudeva. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Whatever we do, we should constantly remember Vasudeva. People are generally addicted to offering obeisances to various demigods. But Bharata Maharaj simply wanted to please Lord Vasudeva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, bhuktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. A yajna may be carried out to satisfy a particular demigod, but when a yajna is offered to the yajna purusha, Narayana, the demigods are satisfied. The purpose of performing different yajnas is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. One may perform them in the name of different demigods or directly. If we directly offer oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods are automatically satisfied. If we water the root of a tree, the branches, twigs, fruits, and flowers are automatically satisfied. When one offers sacrifices to different demigods, one should remember that the demigods are simply parts of the body of the Supreme. If we worship the hand of a person, we intend to satisfy the person himself. If we massage a person's legs, we do not really serve the legs, but the person who possesses the legs. All the demigods are different parts of the Lord, and if we offer service to them, we actually serve the Lord himself. Demigod worship is mentioned in Brahma Samhita, but actually the shlokas advocate worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. For instance, the worship of the goddess Durga is mentioned in this way in Brahma Samhita. Anybody know? Not the older devotees, younger devotees. Huh? No younger devotees? That's also a problem. Very good. I noticed in the beginning when we had this Mangalacharana, the Krishna Swadhamo Pagate verse, used to be that everybody would get it. Somehow this culture is being eroded in our movement, that not everybody knows this or can follow. We have to be sharp like this. Prabhupada, we see his example. He always quoted the Sanskrit verse. And I've noticed in reading Srila Prabhupada's books, again and again and again and again, he will quote in full very basic verses that everyone knows. Dehino sminyatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhiras tatrana muhyati. As an embodied soul passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly, at the time of death, one goes into a new body. Why does Srila Prabhupada do that? Who knows?
Number one is the tradition, the mother of learning. And number two, Prabhupada's idea was anybody who can go anytime, anywhere, they can learn basics. They don't have to start from the beginning.
Very good. Vaisheshika, anything else? Any comment here? Why does Prabhupada quote these verses in full so often?
In a court of law, you have to cite your precedent and case number to be effective. It's also speech and the mode of goodness has to be backed up.
Yeah, 1715. This is the principle. I'm not looking for any particular answer, and both these answers are very good. Another thing is that this is Shravana Mangala. This is Punya Shravana Kirtana. It invokes auspiciousness the more we say these things. And the more, unless we have that example from our acharya, we won't know this. We won't get the idea. Many reasons. But this is another one, very common verse about Durga. Following the orders of Sri Krishna, the goddess Durga creates, maintains, and annihilates. Sri Krishna also confirms this statement in the Bhagavad Gita. Maya Dhyakshena. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. We should worship the demigods in that spirit. Because the goddess Durga satisfies Krishna, we should therefore offer respects to goddess Durga. Because Lord Shiva is nothing but Krishna's functional body, we should therefore offer respects to Lord Shiva. Similarly, we should offer respects to Brahma, Agni, and Surya. There are many offerings to different demigods, and one should always remember that these offerings are actually meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bharata Maharaj did not aspire to receive some benediction from demigods. His aim was to please the Supreme Lord. In the Mahabharata, among the thousand names of Vishnu, it is said, Yajna Bhug, Yajna Hrit Yajna. He is the enjoyer of Yajna, the performer of Yajna, and Yajna itself. Where is this confirmed in Bhagavad Gita? Brahmaivatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhinam. And Prabhupada very nicely translates that verse, which could lend itself to misinterpretation, depending on our association. Prabhupada says, in Krishna consciousness, that all of the activities of Krishna consciousness are on the same transcendental platform. They lead to one place, that is Krishna. It's all devotional service. The Supreme Lord is the performer of everything, but out of ignorance, the living entity thinks that he is the actor. Where do we learn this in Bhagavad Gita? Ganai karmani sarvasha. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham. He thinks. Kartaham iti. He thinks like that. As long as we think we are the actors, we bring about karma bandha, bondage to activity. But if we act for yajna, for Krishna, there is no karma bandha. Yajna arthat, karma nonyatra, lokoyam karma bandhanaha. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. This is a very interesting point. This is in chapter 3. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Our acharyas have taken great pains to explain at length the beginning chapters of Bhagavad Gita, particularly chapters 3 through 5, in dealing with karma yoga. Why? Why is karma so important for us?
That's the basis of advancing to bhakti yoga. That's step number one of the ladder to climb up from the ultimate goal.
Srila Prabhupada said it's like fertilizing your field. If you have a field and you plant things in there, unless it's fertile ground, you can't really do very much with it. Where my mother lives, it's very sandy soil and nothing will grow there. So it makes a difference. Or another analogy is given: wet wood or dry wood. Dry wood will ignite very quickly, no problem. If it's wet, then it's difficult. So to be in sattva-guna is to be dry. You will catch fire. To be in sattva-guna is to be spiritually fertile, so to speak. You will, if blessed with the divine grace of Krishna, then you will respond. If you meet a pure devotee, then you will respond, more likely. Or, as Krishna says at the end of chapter 7 in Bhagavad Gita, what verse is very important in this regard? Anybody know what I'm thinking? Vaisheshika Prabhu is answering all the questions. 7:28, anybody know? Okay, Vaisheshika. Because they are dvandva moha nirmukta, they were free from the illusion and the duality that is part and parcel of this karmic entanglement that we're presently enamored with. They're free from that. Therefore, they can stick with devotional service. They can sustain a mature commitment to devotional service year after year after year. Basically, because they're sattvic. Yesham tu antagatam papam. Antagatam papam means their sins have gone far away. Done. Jananam punya karmanam. And they're also acting in the present moment according to punya karma. Very interesting point. Yes. Yeah. This is a very intricate affair. This is a very intricate thing. The question that you're asking is a little different, so maybe if you bookmark that and we can talk about it at the end, is that okay? Because what we're talking about is preliminary to bhakti. There's a long passage in the Vishnu Purana, I think it's book 6, where Maharaj Sagar, who's described in the 9th canto, he's gone to Arava Muni, and he asks Arava Muni, what can we do for ordinary people, not great sages, not even powerful yogis or karmis even, particularly the qualified, just ordinary people, what can we do for these people in order to allow them to take to pure devotional service, to respond to the opportunity of devotional service when it's given to them? What can we do to help them with that? Does anyone know the answer? It's a very famous verse that's given in Srila Prabhupada's books quite a bit. You may not know because we don't have Vishnu Purana, so I'll say. The answer is that Varnashrama Charavata. Nanya Tattosha Karanam. There is no way, he says, this is his answer, Arava Muni, there is no way to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead if you're an ordinary non-devotee, other than to perform pious activities in the form of your dharma. Particularly, he mentions varna and ashrama dharma, because that's the main manifestation of dharma. Now, karma. We were talking about the beginning chapters of karma, 3 through 5, and the acharyas in their commentaries have very elaborately explained the importance of that karma. Is basically, they use this word karma in the same, synonymously with the word dharma. So there's dharma and there's adharma. But they're not the same thing as karma and akarma. The dharma and adharma are, respectively, karma and vikarma. You see? Akarma becomes devotional service. This is jargon, after all. So, that's the usage. But there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. If you're not doing your material duty, then you are engaged in sinful activity and it will hamper your efforts at devotional service. This is the important point. And in fact, it's made later on as well. in this chapter. I believe it's in text 16. No, it isn't actually. I think it's in the first chapter, and I'll look it up very quickly. Very direct statement here. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. This is text 16 of chapter 1 of this canto in regards to Priyavrata Maharaj. Because the question that opened the fifth canto was regarding Priyavrata Maharaj. Who knows what that question was? That Priyavrata Maharaj, why did he get into his household life? Why did he get into all this material stuff if he was a great devotee? That was the question. And there was a long discussion answering it. So as a part of that answer, here it stated that even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. So you're going to regenerate another body. Liberation has nothing to do with that. And therefore, devotees also, at least to set the example for others, they follow ordinary varna and ashram dharma, which is also called sadharana dharma, ordinary religious principles. In the Isho Upanishad, I believe it's in the Isho Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada gives a list of 18 of these principles for civilized human life that were given by Grandfather Bhishma Dev. Isn't it there, Vaisheshika Prabhu? I think so. Anyway, the point that I'm making here is that karma is dharma. And to not do your karma, it's called niyatam karma. You have to do it every day. It's enjoined. If you don't do that, and you're not a pure devotee, then you will get a sinful reaction. In other words, there are sins of commission, and there are sins of omission. To do something wrong, to do something bad deliberately, that's committing a sinful activity. But to not do something you're supposed to do, that's omitting your duty, is also sinful. This is the point. So we become wet. We become infertile if we do these things. And there's no prospect in devotional service until we are absolutely perfect in our devotional service. There's no prospect for engaging, either the commission of sinful activities or the omission of prescribed duties. This is the point. So we'll continue now with Srila Prabhupada's purport. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Following the instructions of Bharata Maharaj, we should not act not for our personal sense gratification, but for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita 17:28, it is also stated, Ashraddhaya hutam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayat asad ityuchyate partha nachatat pretya no iha. Means sacrifices, austerities, and charities performed without faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead are non-permanent. Regardless of whatever rituals are performed, they are called asat, non-permanent. They are therefore useless both in this life and the next. Activities, karmic activities without faith in the Supreme. This is the pivot here. This is the distinction between Bharata Maharaj and the ordinary karmi. He is Krishna conscious. He's conscious of Krishna. He knows that Krishna is not missing from this picture, even though he's doing all these karmic things, appear to be ordinary mundane duties. Kings like Maharaj Ambarish and many other Rajarshis who were pure devotees of the Lord simply passed their time in the service of the Supreme Lord. When a pure devotee executes some service through the agency of another person, he should not be criticized, for his activities are meant for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. A devotee may have a priest perform some karmakanda, and the priest may not be a pure Vaishnava, but because the devotee wants to please the Supreme Lord, he should not be criticized. The word apurva is very significant. The resultant actions of karma are called apurva. When we act piously or impiously, immediate results do not ensue. We, therefore, wait for the results which are called apurva. The results are manifest in the future. Even the smarthas accept this apurvas. Pure devotees simply act for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the results of their activities are spiritual or permanent. They are not like those of the karnamis, which are non-permanent. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.23. Gatasangasya muktasya jnanavasthita chetasaha yajnaya charata karma samagram pravidiyate. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. The work of a man, in other words, the karma of such a person, or the dharma of such a person. A devotee is always free from material contamination. He is fully situated in knowledge, and therefore his sacrifices are intended for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can't see that always. We don't know. This is why we don't want to judge others. But this is the idea. Any questions or comments on this? Otherwise, you had your question. Everybody can hear.
Service.
Has everybody heard this question by now?
just one other quick one since I got a microphone now. Mm-hmm. What about you were talking about what can we do for the ordinary man, and I'm wondering about when we give out prasadam to normal people, does that not help them make advancement?
Of course. So there are two questions here. The first question is that in Chapter 5 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, we hear that, in effect, removing a thorn with a thorn, the same activities that will entangle us, they will also liberate us. That's the logic by which we worship the deity known as Kamadeva in the Gayatri Mantra. Kama, we know, in this world is the enemy. Where there is Kama, there is no Rama. So what goes? That's true. In general, any activity performed for Krishna's satisfaction is going to elevate us if it's performed for Krishna's satisfaction. What we're talking about here is a dilation on that point. It's a more fine-tuned analysis of that point, which is that we're talking about a specific set of activities. That specific set of activities are called dharma, or in this case, yajna, various yajnas that this Maharaj Bharata was performing. We should not shy away from our prescribed duties or the traditional yajnas that are attached to those duties, samskaras, etc., because they purify us. Yajna dana tapascaiva pavanani manishinaha. Even a wise man is purified by performing sacrifice, by performing charity, by performing austerity. It's always good for us. So the devotees, they act not only for the purpose of purification, but also to set the example in the performance of their prescribed duties. Because the overwhelmingly strong inclination in this degraded age is to somehow or other evade austerity, to evade sacrifice, and to evade charity. And if we can dismiss these things as merely mundane karmakandya nonsense, then we will certainly do so, and that will not necessarily benefit us. More importantly, it will not benefit our descendants. we find that when people adopt this attitude, they 20 or 30 years later wake up with a very disgruntled group of young people. For example. So that's one thing, is that devotees also should perform their ordinary prescribed duty, unless and until they are absolutely perfected in devotional service. That verse Vaisheshika Prabhu has already supplied from the 11th canto, wherein Krishna instructs that directly. As far as your other question is, that if we give someone prasadam, then of course that is a direct, this is an indirect process we're talking about. This whole karma, the whole consideration of dharma, after all, have to underline this, underline the fact that it is preliminary to pure bhakti. That was the context in which this verse arose. This discussion that how do we bring people to the point of pure bhakti? Presumably that means how do we get people to come and join and stay rather than come and join and leave. We see, in particularly in sinful societies, that it's very easy to make people devotees because they don't take anything seriously. But they go away as well. In more structured societies where there's a greater sense of dharma, for example, in the Far East, in India still to some degree, it's harder to get people to join, but they're more solid when they do because they have this. It's called samskar, susamskar, good samskars. It's very important. And this is the point of that verse that we've already discussed. Yesham tuantagatam papam jananam punya karmanam. When we are freed from the delusions that are attendant to sinful activities, when we are freed from the dualistic notions that those sinful activities are predicated on and depend upon, then we can actually stay with devotional service. We will become very, we will appreciate it. We'll have a, Rushi will push through the stages of anartana vritti a lot faster than it is. Otherwise, year after year after year, people struggle with just, they never even get out of anartana vritti. Most devotees don't, actually. This is not, should not be a surprise. Krishna himself says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kashchid yatiti siddhaye yatatamavi siddhanam kashchin mamveti tatvata. Even out of one in a million, basically, is the purport. The persons who try devotional service, he will make it. The rest of them fall down. Prabhupada says in so many places, neophyte devotees, they will fall down most likely after some time. So this is a way to help us. It's not going to guarantee anything. There are no guarantees. After all, it's completely non-mechanical. It's based entirely on grace. Grace. Poshanam tad anugraha in the second canto. There's one Vaishnava Acharya, his name is Vallabhacharya. He has, his path is called Pushti Marga. So that name is coming from this Bhagavatam verse. Poshanam tad anugraha. By his grace we are maintained, spiritually and materially. It's like in the Gayatri Mantra, when we meditate on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's Vishvambhara. How? You follow his process, everything will go on, spiritually. You will be maintained. Otherwise, we don't know. So prasadam is a direct route. This is an indirect route. Prasadam is a direct route. Certainly, you can give people the opportunity for devotional service, but the point here is that they may not be able to stick with it unless they have this good samskar. Is that clear? I hope so. Anything else? Any? Archita Prabhu. Oh.
In regards to your first answer to Prabhuji's first question about, in regards to Vaisheshika Prabhu Shlok, Devarshi Bhutapinanam Pitranam, from what I have understood from that shlok, it basically means that once you have taken shelter of the Lord, Sarvatmanam Smaranam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parihate Kartam, you basically don't have any more responsibilities in the materialistic karma yoga sense of the word. So how would you explain that in terms of what you said, that it's still purifying So are we supposed to still engage in Karma Yoga, or are we supposed to just give that all up?
This is an excellent question. There's a contradiction here. Krishna takes great pains, and the acharyas take great pains in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita to push on this idea of karma. By the end of the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 18, and this is something Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also points out in his commentary on this verse, Krishna says, sarva dharman parityajya, give them all up. So which of the two am I supposed to do? And Arjuna is in a couple of places in Bhagavad Gita is also confused that Krishna, you know, you're telling me to fight this ghastly war and you're also telling me to cultivate knowledge instead, and I don't understand. There is a contradiction. You cannot explain a contradiction. It is a contradiction. And Krishna consciousness is full of contradictions. Get used to it. This is the absolute truth is called achintya bheda bheda. You have to have a contradiction. There's sometimes in a certain time, place, and circumstance, you're going to emphasize the difference, the bheda. Sometimes you're going to emphasize the abheda, the oneness. Not you're going to emphasize, your guru is going to emphasize. That's the point. Tarako pratishta, shrutayo vibhinna. The Shruti says so many things. The Srimad Bhagavatam says so many things that appear to be contradictory. And arguing about these things is a useless waste of time, especially if you, I mean, I wonder, you know, if people, if their only introduction to Krishna consciousness is through the internet, I wonder how they join. Because the devotees are always fighting about so many things, isn't it? See, tarakoparatishta shrutayo vibhinna na savrishir yasya matam na bhinnam. And a person is not even distinguished as a rishi unless he has a different opinion. But dharmasya tattvasya, we're talking about dharma here. The truth of religion is hidden within the heart of the pure devotee. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Whatever he says to do, that's what you do. He is the arbiter. He is the rudder on the boat that is carrying us across a sea of contradictory conclusions. So your guru may say one thing and his guru may say something else. That's fine. There are differences of opinions amongst pure Vaishnavas. But we do whatever the guru says. That's the absolutely central pivot here in understanding any sort of contradiction. Now with this particular contradiction, we can go further. Yes, it's true. If one is completely perfect, then he is no longer a debtor to anyone. He doesn't have to perform his pancha mahabhuta yajnas, etc., all these ordinary karma kandya sort of things. It's true. If he is in that position. And Krishna also says in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita that for someone who is perfect, he has no duty to perform. But it's a long way from where most of us are. Yes, Archita Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. I know we're running a little late, and we can certainly continue, those of us who would like to. I'd just like to contribute here, based on the answer you just gave to that question. You know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, at the beginning of each verse, Kaviraj Maharaj gives a little glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he says,
yeah.
I believe it's the beginning of the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila, he says, Shri Chaitanya Prabhu Vande, Balopi Yadanugrahat. Tharen Nana Madhagaha Vyaptim Siddhanta Sagar.
Yeah, yeah.
That he's worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because by his mercy, even a bala, a child, can cross the ocean of inconclusive theories. There's so many theories out there filled with the crocodiles.
Vayurgantane Vashaya. Like the air carrying aromas. Yeah, so many attractive worldviews coming our way. Huh. One more, please.
Hare Krishna. My remembrance of something Srila Prabhupada said, or actually did, is that when Prabhupada saw someone whose tendency was to do physical labor or to be a Vaishya business person, what I saw in Prabhupada's vision was to take that Vaishya and have him work directly in a spiritual business, like Spiritual Sky or Govindish, gift shop, or if his tendency was to do physical labor, build Rathyatra carts and use their work within the Hare Krishna movement.
Yes.
It was completely transcendent of all the gradual processes.
Yeah, this is the most important point. I should have mentioned that We're talking about daivi varnashrama dharma. We're not interested in mundane varnashrama dharma. Mundane varnashrama dharma becomes daivi varnashram dharma when the focus is on Krishna, which is exactly what the example of Bharata Maharaj is in this passage. He knows that he's doing this for Krishna. He knows how he's doing it for Krishna. He sees its connection with Krishna. This we have to develop. And Prabhupada said any pure devotee is able to do this, able to make things relevant, maybe able to explain what is the importance of this, how does it connect, connecting the dots, as we say. Otherwise, there's a very nice, in general, we should read the 11th canto if we want further explanations of all the things that are taught in Bhagavad Gita, because the 11th canto is like expanded version of Bhagavad Gita. So there's a couple of nice verses there that are relevant in this connection, and I'll just mention them and then we'll stop. One is that there's a question of guna and dosha. Guna means quality, dosha means flaw. So Krishna tells Uddhava that to do what you are able to do and to not attempt anything more than that, nor settle for anything less than that, that is called guna. To do anything else, that is called dosha, flaw. So our spiritual master will determine what is our capacity. He will give us an appropriate engagement. We really don't have to do anything. We don't have to calculate so much. We, once we've accepted a bona fide spiritual master, that's what we have spiritual masters for. They are able to give tangible shape, give a practical manifestation to the abstract principles that we find in our shastras. Especially with regarding to dharma. Nobody can understand dharma. It's beyond all of us. It is such a complex thing. Klaus Klostermeyer, famous scholar, he is a long-time associate of ISKCON, and he met Srila Prabhupada in the early 1960s. He said that that the single most voluminous body of knowledge that exists in the Sanskrit language comprises the Dharma Shastra. Why? Because it explains everything in minute detail, legalistic detail, how you apply dharma in specific times, places, and circumstances. Now, if you want to learn all that, that's fine. But the easy thing is, as we said before, mahajana yena gata sapanta. Whatever the mahajana says, you do that. That's one thing. And then the second thing is, there's a nice verse again in the 11th canto wherein Krishna says, atma aparijnana mayo vivado. Any kind of argument that's based on incomplete realization, and most of us, that's the kind of argument that we have, because we're incompletely realized, he said it's a waste of time. Hi astiti nastiti bidarthanishta. Somebody says, yes, it is. Somebody says, no, it isn't. And both of them are bidarthanishta. They're fixed in their intractable position. Naivo parameta pungsam, Krishna says. They can never at any time give up that attachment to winning the argument that's based on a partial picture of reality. He says, such unfortunate persons, they can't understand that they've already turned away from me. So again, tarko pratishtha. It's not there. The real absolute truth we'll find at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and those who represent him. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.